So this week, I want to talk about a blog that I wrote about a year ago. It was called our Stay Active blog. We did a big Stay Active campaign focused on players on the bench who aren't getting as much playing time as they want and what they can do to still stay involved in the game. I talked about a lot of things about, you know, being on the bench, cheering for your teammates, how that can be fun, how you can, you know, learn a lot by watching. And I was really surprised at some of the negative reactions I got from some parents. Parents that I knew, I guess a few text messages, a few emails, but parents who somehow implied that what I was saying was wrong, or I remember one parent was like, "You'll understand when it's your kid," mm-hmm. and that what you were saying is not correct, yeah. I guess, by any means.
Well, can you explain what you kind of wrote or what you were talking about?
I mean, I got it right here. What I'm talking about is that, like, I feel like at some point every player, and I'm going to ask you about this in a second, but like every player is going to be on a team where they're not going to get as much playing time as they think they deserve. And so when you're in that situation, what options do you have? And I think we can, from our experiences, we see a lot of kids. What do you see most kids do when they're not getting their playing time and they're on the bench during the game?
Yeah, pout or just kind of be neutral about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I was and one thing I said in one of my recent blogs was that, like, when I was coaching and a player made a good play on the court and you look down the bench to see 5-6 guys sitting on their hands, like, it's not the perception of unity and teamwork that is probably necessary. And I compared it to, like, the recent trend of college teams, NBA teams having these really extravagant bench celebrations. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but what I'm saying is that, like, just because you're not getting the playing time you think you deserve, that doesn't mean it's okay for you to pout, and it doesn't mean that pouting and showing your displeasure is the right way to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess, and I wrote this from experience, but I want to ask you, like, did that ever happen to you, and how did you respond?
Yeah, I mean, I think it happens to, you know, pretty much every player at some point in time. Again, maybe not the five-star recruits, the absolute studs, but for the most part, you know, 98% of the basketball playing population, it's going to happen to you at some point. And that might be third grade, it might be high school, it might be college if you're lucky enough to make it that far, it might be pros. But for me, yeah, I can actually remember one particular instance. I think I got, you know, for the most part, pretty good playing time throughout my career. Actually, you know what? There were two particular cases. My senior year in high school, my coach decided to do 5 and 5 subs. And that was really, really hard for me to deal with because we had two Division I players on the team. Myself, who maybe wasn't a Division I player at the time because I didn't have any scholarships, but I ended up being Division I. And then another guy, my good friend, who had committed to play at Cornell. And we were basically given the same amount of playing time as some of the other guys who came off the bench, who we knew didn't work as hard as us, didn't want to play in college, didn't care as much as we did. And that was really hard for me to deal with. And I know I didn't handle that the best way I could have. You know, I was unhappy when I went to the bench. But there's another particular time the following year when I was at prep school. I mentioned this last week on our podcast. One of the ways I sacrificed for basketball is took a grade 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on an unbelievable team. We had 9 Division I players, 2 NBA guys, 1 Jarrett Jack, who's still playing. I had a Division I college scholarship. I had a scholarship to Davidson. I was going to play there next year, and I was the 8th guy on the team. I was the 3rd guy off the bench. And the whole season, but I knew that going in. I knew there was a lot of talent ahead of me. I knew I wasn't going to play a ton, and I was going to have to earn it. And, man, I fought and fought and fought for it. And the whole season, I was kind of somewhere in between 10 to 15 minutes a game. That's all I mm-hmm. played the whole season. But, man, I got better in practice and workouts and that sort of stuff. But in the semifinals of the league tournament, we were one of the better teams. I think I played 2 minutes. So I went from playing 10 to 15 minutes a game to playing 2 minutes. And that really upset me. And I definitely showed it. It was on my face, in my body language. I mean, I was angry after the game. My coach knew it. Everyone knew it. And lucky enough for me, I had a coach who was mature enough and cool enough to talk to me after the game.
Did your team win that game?
We won. Yeah, we won. So we went to the finals. Mm-hmm. And then actually my coach played me in the finals more than he's ever played me. And I had like, I think I had like 19 points. I was one of the better players. It was against Rashad McCants' team in the finals, who ended up going to Carolina in the NBA. So I guess I did prove myself a little bit, but I for sure did not handle it the right way. Everyone knew I was upset. I just got lucky that I had a coach cool enough to talk to me. And if I could go back in time, you know, I would do it over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those two specific, one's a specific instance, and then one is kind of generally my senior season in high school.
Yeah. And I think my mind, like, I'm embarrassed by it. I had two instances like you where I went through a spell of a few games, like, back to back. Like, when I was at Baylor, then when I played professionally, like, one of my last seasons in Germany, like, I just wasn't playing well, and my coach didn't play me a lot. And I think about how my mindset on during those games and how I acted on the bench, and I wasn't, like, you know, overly pouting, but I wasn't happy, and I didn't hide my dissatisfaction. And it's, like, it's almost embarrassing for me now looking back on it, thinking that, you know, I responded not in a mature way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what is that going
to
do?
Did anyone say anything to you? Did anyone try to talk to you about it or mention anything to you? Parents, coach, teammates, anything? Or was it just kind of
I would talk with my parents about it. And then after a few games, I would talk with my coach about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think, yes, if I were younger, but I mean, I was in college and I was playing professionally. Like, I should have been mature enough to handle that. But I think, you know, and that's why I was kind of surprised from the response that we got from parents of, like, a sort of not attacking me. That's not the right word, but, like, disagreeing with what I wrote. Because in my mind, like, what's the other option?
Yeah, disagreeing that if their kid doesn't get as much playing time as they want, disagreeing that they should be positive and still cheering.
Yeah.
Agreeing that, or saying that, thinking that it's okay for them to pout and
yes, that's the way. And my, like, I try to make it clear that, you know, no one's going to be happy sending on. I mean, if you're a competitor, you want to play, obviously. And I'm not saying you have to accept it and be happy about it. What I'm saying is, like, there in that moment, like, what are your options? If you're not going to play, you can either quit, you can pout on the bench and show it, or you can try to make the best of the situation. Help your team. Basketball is a team sport. It's not about you. And I think as a coach, you see it a little bit too, is that when, you know, at the end of the day, especially as you get older, like when you were upset that you didn't play that game in high school and your coach talked to the game, but your team won. You know what I mean? So
yeah. No, I definitely, looking back, feel pretty selfish about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm embarrassed about it as well. And again, I was lucky enough that at prep school, my coach was mature enough and cool enough to talk to me about. He actually admitted that, or thought that he made a mistake, and said, "Okay, you know," and corrected that. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the next game, but really, he probably could have. He had every right to say, "Look, the way you acted was not appropriate. It's the semifinals. I understand you didn't get the playing time you want, but you can still help this team from the bench." And that's a really, I mean, it's not an easy thing.
No.
To again go back to last week about sacrificing for basketball or whatever goal it is you want. Like, it's not an easy thing. Some of these things we are, trying to get the ideas we're trying to get across. They're not easy, whether it's sacrificing, whether it's, in the face of not playing the minutes you want, still being positive and cheerful on the bench and trying to have a positive impact. That is so hard. And I think back to it, I do wish someone had talked to me a bit more about it. Now, would I have listened to it, really? I'm not sure at that time. But I definitely think it would have been – I think it's a coach's responsibility to enforce some sort of demeanor on the bench. And actually, if you notice – all the best teams have amazing benches, like, you know, because that can be a big time cancer. It'll lead from one guy to the next, all the way down the bench. And next thing you know, there's absolutely no energy from the bench. Mm-hmm. Then kids aren't prepared to when they get in the game, when they're called upon, they're not ready.
That's what, and that's what, that was one of my points that I brought up, is that, you know, you sit there pouting on the bench, and then, you know, 15, 20 minutes go by, all of a sudden the coach yanks you off the bench and throws you in the game. Are you mentally prepared to enter that game? Or, and that's my point, is like, if you would have been engaged in the game, enthusiastic, cheering your teammates, watching and observing, studying what the other team is doing, and having a good time with it, you're going to be so much more prepared to enter the game when it finally comes than if you're sitting there thinking about how mad you are and how upset you are with the coach and, you know, everyone's against you and how unfair everything is. Like, that's a real negative frame of mind. And I felt that when I wasn't getting my playing time that I wanted in Germany. I felt that when I went into the game, I was like, I'm not ready because I've been over here in a negative frame of mind the whole time.
That negative energy or lack of energy on the bench then can translate onto the court.
Yeah.
It's a lack of energy while you're playing. I definitely think it's a coach's responsibility to manage his bench's emotions, energy, whatever you want to call it.
But I think there's a couple of ways you can manage it, though, is that you can enforce a rule and you can be, you know, you can be sort of demanding about it, but you can also like explain that it can be fun. You know, like, I mean, watch some of these, you all right, Cole?
Yeah.
Watch some of these like really good college programs and watch the guys on the bench and like, they're having a really good time.
Like,
it's fun. Maybe they're not getting as much playing time as they want, but they're still active. They're still fun to be had. You're still a part of a team. You're sitting front row for a really good show.
Let me ask you this. Do you ever think that some teams take it too far, or do you think there's a limit to it, or do you think it's kind of, I mean, of course there's a limit to it if you're somehow messing up the game or the ref is getting upset or something like that, but like otherwise, I mean, do you think there, maybe some guys are kind of, you know, especially like during the NCAA tournament or something like that, like they know they might be able to get on camera with a bench reaction, like you see, like, you know, the walk-ons at the end of the bench in these college games sometimes have like dances made up and stuff. Like, I think it's pretty funny and you know, I kind of like it. I enjoy it. But like, as a coach, do you ever think it might cross a line or they might go too far and it can be distracting?
As a coach for that team, I don't know. I think it'd become an issue is if like the other team feels like you're rubbing something in their face. It's unsportsmanlike. I don't think that, and I think if another coach thinks that, that could be, you know, maybe overly sensitive. Yeah. But I think that's every coach's choice. What do they want their team culture to be? Do they want, if that gets them fired up and it's a good thing and everybody's positive about it, and nobody's, you know, if it's not hurting anybody, if it's not upsetting anybody, if it's not distracting anybody, then, you know, I'm all for it. Would I do it personally? I mean, that's not my personality.
But what do you think about, I've seen some high school teams, I've never seen a college team do it, but I've seen some high school teams do it over the past couple of years where the coach makes them do like a defense chant on the bench.
I've never seen that.
You've never seen it?
No, what do they do?
Like they're sitting there doing a team cheer on the bench, like defense.
Oh, really?
Defense. Yeah.
No, I've never seen that.
Yeah. I think that is a bit ridiculous. Where,
why?
I don't know. The coach is making them do a team cheer like they're a bunch of cheerleaders. I think there should be maybe some rules instituted where it's like, hey, when someone comes out of the game, you stand up, you give them a high five, sit back down. But, you know, if I'm a coach, I am talking to my team about their actions on the bench and their energy on the bench, and then kind of giving them or encouraging them individually to make the choice to either have high energy and positivity or not. And then I'm trying to find a way to reward the guys with high energy and positivity on the bench. Like, I don't know how you feel about it, but when I'm coaching, if I'm constantly hearing Johnny down on the bench screaming and yelling in a positive manner for his teammates, like when I'm thinking for a sub, he's kind of the first guy that pops into mind, and I'm thinking, man, he's got great energy, and you kind of want to reward guys like that rather than, you know, Chris down there who's pouting and got has his head down. I mean,
that is something too that really kind of blows my mind, is like the fact that some coaches, and I know every coach is different. There are probably a lot of coaches that are very successful that don't focus on this, but the amount of coaches that don't focus on it, I mean, to me, like, this is just such a huge part of a team sport, is how the team feels like as a unit. What's your energy like? I mean, and I don't know. I watched a college game, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, and one team was down. They were down by 10 with like 5 minutes to go. And they started coming back. They got it within six with like a minute. And I watched – sometimes it's fun. Try this. Like when you watch a game, just watch benches. Watch benches. They go back and forth. And I was watching this team's bench. They were down by five with like a minute to go, and everyone was just sitting there, the coaches included, kind of slumped over like the game was over. And you compare that to a team that really has a lot of success. I mean, you know, I watched Duke in the Maui Classic a few years ago. And they were acting like it was like an NCAA tournament. They're all hype. They never lack bench energy, you know? It blows my mind. How do coaches not focus on this?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an overlooked part of a team is bench energy. And I understand from a head coach's position, sometimes you can get so wrapped up in what's happening on the court that you forget what's happening behind you. But if you are a high school coach or a college coach, a pro coach, I mean, you have assistants. Step I know college coaches have begun to take, and even I think some NBA teams, is they've taken one coach and put him halfway down the bench so that he's sitting in between players. And my understanding is that coach is responsible for communicating with some players and, you know, maybe monitoring bench energy might be part of their job.
I've heard some people do that so that it keeps those guys on the bench from complaining amongst themselves.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing, right? Yeah, it's like negative energy versus positive energy.
What a cancer.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And, you know, another point I want to bring up here is imagine two scenarios, one where a player brings positive energy, is cheery and is active on the bench, and he's not happy with his playing time. Of course he's not happy. Then another player, negative energy, pouting, moaning on the bench, not happy with his playing time. They both decide that they want to talk to the coach about more playing time. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the coach naturally is going to be much more open to the first guy who's positive, who's high energy, and the coach is going to say, you know what, I'm going to be open about this. He's been an amazing teammate, amazing player to coach. I'm going to talk with him more about it. I'm going to kind of open my mind a little bit, hear his point of view, and potentially, you know, maybe I'll reward him with some more. Whereas the other guy comes in, and right away the coach is probably a little bit tense and kind of angry at the player for being negative, for being a bit of a cancer on the team. And so automatically from the jump of that meeting, either doesn't have the meeting at all or has the meeting, but like is just so kind of so full of negative emotions about that player's actions that he's not going to be open to giving that player more playing time.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance. I mean, and that's what, you know, I think some of the people that responded to my blog were like, you know, what do you do? I mean, I guess like, yeah, what would you do in the situation where your child plays for a coach that they don't really respect, they question everything the coach does, they're not getting as much playing time they want, and their team is losing a bunch of games? I mean, what do you think? What would you advise somebody to do in that situation?
No, I mean, that's really hard. You know, it's not an easy situation. But, you know, I would like to believe that if my daughter is ever in that situation, that I'm going to have some emotional maturity about myself. I'm going to see the forest for the trees, so to speak, and understand that this is a great learning opportunity for her. Mm-hmm. Okay, she may not really see eye to eye with the coach. She may want more playing time, and they may be losing. You can learn from all three of those things, and combined, you can definitely learn, and that's some of those life lessons that we like to talk about. You know, A, I'm telling her the coach is the coach, and, you know, whether you agree with him or her or not, the coach is the coach. That's who you're playing for. Mm-hmm. You know, deal with it. You're going to have some bosses that you probably don't like later on in life. You're going to have to learn how to communicate with them. So deal with it. Mm-hmm. Playing time. Okay, you want more playing time? Well, first of all, work harder. Like, you're going to the gym 1 hour a day? Start going 2 hours. You're going two? Okay, go three. Get in the weight room, whatever it is. Work harder if you think you need to earn it. Then you can also responsibly and maturely request a meeting with your coach, lay it out, get feedback. Okay, what can I do better? How can I earn more playing time? I would love to play more. Coach, what can I do to earn more playing time? How can I help the team? Is there something else I can be doing? And then losing, you know, that's just part of life. Sometimes, and it's part of sports for sure. Sometimes you have losing seasons. Very few people go through their whole sports career and win all the time, you know? Very, very few. Again, 98% of the players out there have losing seasons. You're going to have to learn how to deal with that, and that's really difficult. Mm-hmm. But again, it goes back to kind of seeing the forest for the trees, maintaining positive energy, you know, enthusiasm, even in the face of adversity, and just continuing to work, and power through it.
Again, it's not easy, but no. At the end of the day, and another point I brought up in my writing is that, like, you know, once you get older, your playing days are going to end at some point. And I think when you talk to, like, people that have played basketball for, like, a long time, what is, like, the one thing that I want to see if you guys want to talk, like, the one thing most guys say, like, oh, what do they miss the most about playing?
Yeah, just the camaraderie.
Yeah, it's being a part of a team.
Teammates, yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean, now that I'm done, I'd give anything to just be in the locker room with the team. And even if I sat on the bench,
traveling,
eating meals with the team, sitting on the bench, cheering those guys on, helping them. And another point I brought up in the blog, too, is like, you can actually really help your team.
Yeah.
Coaches don't notice everything.
Yeah.
And if someday more than likely you're not going to play in the NBA. More than likely, high school players are not going to play professionally. If you think, I want to have a career in basketball, maybe you want to become a coach.
Yeah.
It's a great chance. Sit front row, study the game.
Well, and this is actually interesting. You know, Cole and I, who's back there filming, we listened to a podcast about a week or two ago. I believe it was by the author of a book called Captain Class. Mm-hmm. And this guy studied, I think it was the top 15 or 20 teams ever in history. So, like, you're talking about Barcelona, Spurs, and there was a lot throughout all sorts of different sports. And what he found was the biggest difference maker in those clubs and other clubs is the captain. And the interesting thing about the captain was it wasn't the star player most of the time. It was, for the Warriors, it's Andre Iguodala. He's not the star. He's a starter sometimes, or most of the time. Sometimes he comes off the bench. I'm not sure where he's at right now, but he took less money to be there. But he's the guy that keeps that team together. And they talked about all these different teams, and it was always the captain. And most of the time, the captain was not the star player. He was just kind of the glue that kept it all together with energy, enthusiasm, leadership. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. So I think players need to keep that in mind too, that just because you're not the star doesn't mean you are not as important or even the most important piece of the team. So you can have, like, back to your point, you can have an extremely positive impact on a team, whether you're getting a lot of playing time, a little, or none at all. Mm-hmm.
I want to exaggerate this, but you said players can focus on that. Absolutely. I think at a younger age, parents have got to be the one. Coaches have got to be the ones that, you know, I think if my son ever grows up to play and I see him, I'm going to be so disappointed and even probably angry if I see him pouting on the bench. I think it's poison when a kid pounces on the bench, he gets in the car with mom or dad. Mom or dad talks about what an idiot the coach is. What are we going to do? We're going to transfer schools. We're going to do that. Like, that's just like a snowball of negativity rolling down the mountain that's not going to solve your problem.
Absolutely, because I mean the kids, especially young kids, elementary school kids, middle school kids, they are going to believe whatever mom and dad say. And if mom and dad are complaining about the coach and this and that, like, the kid, of course they're going to believe that same thing, and it, you know, it's just going to be a snowball of negativity, like you said. It's just going to pile up and get to a point where it's like, I mean, it's out of control. Yeah. And
you're not going to see the results you want. Like, that's not, that's what kind of, you know, when you stand back and look at it, that's what's really the whole irony of the situation is people think, like, I'm in this situation, what can I do to make the situation better? And they're taking...
Well, you know what's happening now is they're just, boom, changing, switching teams, whatever it is. So,
but I mean, like, in my mind, like, the bet, and I think it's harder, it's easy to...
to quit.
To sit on the bench, to quit, to blame everybody else. It's much harder to keep a, like, put on a positive face, be energetic on the bench, even though you don't really feel that way. But that is what's probably going to make your situation better.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's teaching, again, it goes back to life lessons like basketball and sports. It's so much bigger than just basketball or whatever sport it may be. I mean, sports is such a great vehicle for life lessons. And like, if you can't learn to overcome some adversity where you're not getting the playing time you want and you can't be, you know, you can't respond positively emotionally to it, like, you're going to have a lot more bigger problems later on in your life. And if you can't even handle not being able to play, and maybe that's learned from mom and dad complaining about it or not, or maybe it's the player was just, you know, being upset about it, but mom and dad never corrected it. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to handle the much more important issues you have later on in life. So if parents can teach their kids early to deal with adversity like this and respond with positivity and energy, And again, it's not easy, but if parents can teach that in their kids, they're building these blocks that these kids are going to be able to use later on in their life to overcome some of this stuff.
So if you're one of these parents, what are some, I mean, like, if I'm one of these parents specifically, I'm telling my child, like, hey, I know you're disappointed, but hey, watch the Golden State Warriors play, watch their bench. If you want to be on, if you're going to be on the bench, like, look at these guys. Are they having a good time? I know it's easy. I know they're NBA players. I know they're more emotionally mature. But like, kids look up to NBA players and they will follow what they do. They'll follow their example. So if I'm a player, I'm like, watch the Golden State Warriors. Tell me those guys on the bench aren't having a good time.
Yeah.
And hopefully my son or daughter copies what they do, and all of a sudden they're in the game and they're doing it, and other kids are doing it. So I guess besides that, what is something concrete that you're telling your child? Hey, instead of pouting, think about it like this, do this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not telling my child, look, you should be happy about this. Mm-hmm. I'm not. Like, recognize, you know, they're feeling you're not happy about this. You want to play more. I recognize that. Okay, well, what can you do about it right now? Not much right now. I mean, what you can do, though, is be positive and continue to be energetic. Then what you can do is start working a little bit harder. Where are your weaknesses? Let's focus on those. Now let's spend 30 minutes more every day, an hour more every day focusing on that. And in the mid to long term, you will be able to earn more playing time. You know, I'm also maybe telling my child, why don't you respectfully go ask the coach to talk with him about playing time, get his or her feedback. Where are my weaknesses? How can I get better? How can I help the team? How can I earn more playing time, not give me more playing time? How can I earn more? Take that and, again, apply it to extra work outside, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever that may be. But you've got to earn your playing time. You've got to work for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree. But I'm trying to think of different ways because, like you said, that's extremely hard. And it's extremely hard for a kid to get I like having the conversations with them. I like advising them to talk with the coaches, but I think really effective learning tools are like stories, like, hey, this happened to me and this is what I did, or watch these NBA guys that you look up to, or putting something else in their mind of, you know, I love thinking that, you know, when I was at Baylor and I was on the bench and I was upset, for some reason I really enjoyed talking to my teammates when they came off the floor, because I felt like, you know, coaches don't see everything. And sometimes I felt like I could advise, hey, I'm not playing, but when you're in there, look at this, look what's happening.
Be like a player coach.
Yeah, be like a player coach. Yeah, and like for that. Me, that was fun. And I think if we can encourage kids to, hey, focus on this, and you might find that that's a lot more fun.
Yeah. No, I like the idea of helping others, of taking the focus off of yourself and, you know, quote unquote, being selfish and just trying to help others, trying to help your teammates, trying to help your coaches. Most guys you play with, your friends with, so help your friends, right? You want to see your friends succeed and do well. So yeah, take the focus off. Why aren't I playing? How can I get more playing time and focus on helping your teammate, helping your buddy who just came out and telling him or her, hey, I see this, maybe you can do this, watch out for this.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And then you're also improving yourself because you're learning to kind of be a coach from the bench so that when you do start getting playing time, you're analyzing the game and figuring out, okay, when I go in the game, the defense is giving this, or I could do this. This is open for our team. So, I mean, yeah, I actually really like that idea, because then it teaches you to be more analytical about the game, which will help you when you do get the playing time that you want.
Yeah. I think something another idea youth coaches can do is, like, take time in practice to come up with, like, a bench celebration.
Yeah.
Brings everybody together. Everyone takes part in that. You're on the floor. You're getting the attention. You score points. Great. If you're on the bench and you're doing this, like, here's the way we're going to have fun. Here's the way you're going to stay involved in the game.
Yeah, and I actually think youth coaches take that one step further and, you know, maybe start giving out weekend, like if you have a weekend tournament or a weekly set of practices, games, or monthly, whatever it is, make a competition out of it. Come up with a prize. Like, I'm going to give this prize to the most active, energetic, positive teammate that we have this month or this week or this weekend. Now they get a shirt or they get some shoes or whatever, an armband or something. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I think I've heard some colleges and some other teams doing it where they give like a special color jersey to the best teammate of the week or whatever it might be. So I think there's some creative ways coaches, especially youth coaches, can make competitions out of and games out of it to recognize players that maybe aren't on the floor as much and maybe off the floor so that they can stay engaged and stay involved. Because, I mean, those kids shouldn't just be, hey, you're on the bench and just forget about them. I think it is part of the coach's responsibility, like we talked about, to keep them engaged and keep them active and encourage it and reward them for that.
Keep them feeling like they're still part of the team.
Right.
Even if they're not directly contributing on the court, let them know, like, people just want to feel needed.
Yeah.
You know, if you cast aside, like, of course, I'm cast aside, the coach isn't playing me, he doesn't pay attention to me, like, I'm just going to sit here.
Yeah.
That's just, and it's not fun. And I've done it. And so I think that's the main thing, is, like, letting people know, like, you and I are saying this because we've done the opposite and it didn't get us the results that we wanted.
No.
And I think it's important to know, like, I'm telling you, I'm advising this. This is what I believe because I did it the other way and I was miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable. Yeah. I didn't play well. I felt bad for myself. And I'm like I said, I regret it. I'm embarrassed by it now.
Let me ask you this. You, as you know, say whatever, 10 years from now, your child is in this position. He's a fourth grader, fifth grader, not getting the playing time he wants. You know, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm telling him to watch teams that I think do the right thing. Like, I'm telling him to watch the Golden State Warriors. I'm telling him to watch, you know, I know we're in North Carolina, this is risky, but tell him to watch Duke. Tell him to watch teams that I feel like have a good culture on the bench. And what do they do? And I'm also telling him, like, you know, this is, you're not going to get what you want by acting this way, you know? And the best way to get what you want is to work to stay positive. And you know, I'm telling him to do the harder thing. It'd be much easier just to say, like, yeah, we'll look for a new school next year. I know, coach is an idiot. Let's just deal with it. Let's just get through it.
Yeah.
But in my mind, again, that's a bad lesson. I'm telling him, like, look, there are people that are playing, there are people on the bench that still have a good time. You can still be extremely helpful. And if I needed to, maybe I would go talk to his coach about, hey, he's feeling this way. If you can just let him know that his role is important, helping the coach recognize the way my son is feeling. And hopefully the coach is smart enough to address it with him and bring everybody back together. But again, I know it's extremely difficult. And I know, especially for younger kids, to sort of drop their ego, because, I mean, they think it's embarrassing. They think they're not good. They think the coach hates them. They just think all this negative stuff, when in actuality, it's just a part of the game.
Yeah.
Every team.
And this might be a conversation for another day, but that's one of the reasons we've set up our club the way we have. Our club teams or AAU teams, whatever you want to call them, is we tell everyone, look, we're not a recreational team. It's not split playing time, five in, five out, everyone plays equal, everyone gets a trophy. It's not that. But at the same time, we are not cutthroat. Like, your child is going to get some time, and if they do a good job while they're on the court, they're going to be rewarded to get more more time. So we're not cutthroat, we're not recreational, we're somewhere in the middle. And it's a fine line, and it's a tough kind of tightrope to walk, but that's where we're at. But why we're doing that is because we believe so strongly that playing time, and it can teach this life lesson of, you know, you've got to work to earn more. And you know, maybe it's going to be a little bit of adversity for you. You're not getting as much as you want, but you've got to earn it. You're not going to be given anything on the court. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be given anything in life. And it's so important for them to realize that early on. Have the coach work through it with them. Have mom and dad work through it with them. And then if the coach and the parents set the right example, I think it really sets a kid up later on in life for really, really big success.
When you think back to that, like, I think, do you ever think you were lucky for going through that? I'm almost glad that I went through
100%. Yeah. Man, I mean, if I was just good, you know, my entire basketball career, or like getting all the playing time I ever wanted and never struggled, like
never experienced disappointment.
Yeah, never experienced disappointment. I wouldn't have known how to handle some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Most of the time in those situations, again, sometimes my emotional reaction was not the mature one when I was in high school, and I wished it would have been different. But I will say what it did do is force me to work my butt off, and I just worked and worked and worked because I wanted that to change. And so now that's kind of what I go to now. Now I try to have the appropriate emotional reaction now that I know what that looks like. But then I also work my butt off to change things and to earn whatever I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting topic. And I think it's, like we said, let's say it again. We know that it's not easy.
Not easy.
We're telling you from experience, in order to change things or have a positive experience, there's always options.
Yeah.
And choosing to just sit and be negative and stew in your disappointment and your anger is not advised by us. We've been through it. It's not the way to do it.
Yeah, and parents, you know, if I could leave you with one last piece of advice, like, please try to see the forest for the trees. Try to see the bigger picture. Who, you know, if your son has a tough season in fifth grade, doesn't play as much as they want, or maybe they're losing or whatever it might be, like, it's not that big a deal. It's fifth grade basketball. It's fifth grade spring, summer, AAU basketball or whatever it is. Maybe it's a school season. But in the whole scheme of things, it's not that big a deal. This is a really small deal, but it can have pretty serious consequences later on if you do not teach your child to respond the right way, or at least try to teach them the right way. If you just teach them to give up, quit, pout, that's what they're going to do later on in life. If you try to work with them through it, teach them the right way to respond, that's how they're going to respond most likely later on.
Yeah. Stay positive, stay engaged, and just work harder. I think that's what it comes down to. So cool. That's all I got.
All right.
We'll sign off.
Sounds good. Yeah.